Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Thorstein Veblen's The Theory of the Leisure Class, first published in 1899 and later issued in Oxford World's Classics, is a landmark work of economics and social criticism. It does not behave like a standard economics text focused on prices, markets, or utility maximization. Instead, Veblen examines how wealth, rank, and prestige shape human conduct in modern societies. His central claim is that many economic choices are better understood as forms of social display than as responses to practical need. The book introduces the enduring concepts of conspicuous consumption and conspicuous leisure, showing how people and classes use visible waste, time, and expenditure to signal status. It also traces how these habits influence institutions such as education, religion, sport, and domestic life. Because of this wide scope, the book sits at the intersection of economics, sociology, and cultural critique, and remains influential for understanding consumer culture and the social meaning of money. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, conspicuous consumption as a system of social signaling. Veblen's best-known insight is that people often buy goods not only for use, but to make wealth visible. Conspicuous consumption means purchasing items whose main social function is to display ability to spend, whether through luxury clothing, houses, jewelry, servants, or other publicly noticeable goods. The point is not simply indulgence, it is communication. In Veblen's account, consumption becomes a competitive language of rank, where the value of an object depends partly on how effectively it marks the buyer as superior to others. This is why he treats waste as socially useful within status competition. The more expensive and unnecessary the item, the stronger the signal may be. That idea makes the book strikingly modern, because it anticipates later theories of signaling and status behavior. It also explains why economic life cannot be reduced to private utility alone. Choices are made in relation to an audience, and the audience interprets them through social hierarchy. Veblen therefore shifts attention from what goods do materially to what they do socially. Secondly, conspicuous leisure and the prestige of non-productive time. Before luxury goods became the dominant form of status display, Veblen argues that elite standing was often shown through conspicuous leisure. This means the visible ability to avoid productive labor and spend time on refined, unhurried, or impractical activities. Leisure is not merely rest in his analysis. It is a public mark of exemption from necessity. Education in manners, cultivated tastes, sporting skill, and other forms of polished conduct can all function as proof that a person is not forced to work for survival. Veblen also introduces the related idea of vicarious leisure, where households employ others to perform labor so that the family's own lack of productive work remains visible. This matters because it reveals how status is embedded in time as well as in goods. The elite do not only own more, they are able to live in ways that make their freedom from work observable. Veblen's treatment of leisure therefore challenges the assumption that free time is naturally desirable in itself. In his framework, leisure becomes a social institution that reproduces inequality by converting inactivity into honor. Thirdly, the leisure class as a historical legacy of predatory social orders. Veblen does not treat the leisure class as a simple byproduct of modern capitalism. He sees it as rooted in older social formations shaped by predation, conquest, and division between honorable and dishonorable work. In these societies, warfare, hunting, priesthood, and other non-productive roles gained prestige, while manual labor was assigned lower status and often linked to women or dependent groups. This historical perspective allows Veblen to explain why modern elites continue to prize exemption from useful labor even in industrial society. The leisure class inherits and adapts older honor codes, preserving the belief that certain forms of activity are inherently superior because they are associated with power rather than production. This is one reason his book is not just a critique of consumer excess, but a theory of social evolution. He wants to show that status behavior persists because institutions carry forward earlier habits of valuation. The result is a social order in which productive efficiency may expand, but moral prestige still attaches to those who stand furthest from necessity. Veblen's analysis is important because it links economic inequality to cultural memory, not merely to individual preference. Fourthly, industrialism, status conflict, and the transformation of visible waste. A major theme of the book is the tension between industrial production and the social habits that survive within industrial society. Veblen argues that technological progress increases output, but the gains are not simply absorbed by comfort or efficiency. Instead, a large share of new wealth is redirected into status competition. As society becomes larger and more anonymous, conspicuous leisure becomes harder to read directly. So conspicuous consumption becomes more important because it is easier to display publicly through goods that everyone can recognize. This shift is crucial to the book's argument about modernity. Industrialism makes abundance possible, yet social comparison ensures that abundance does not translate into equal well-being. Instead, visible waste expands to absorb surplus production. Veblen's point is not that all consumption is irrational, but that the social environment pushes people toward emulation and rivalry. This creates a persistent conflict between the logic of industry, which values efficiency and useful output, and the logic of leisure class honor, which values display. The book remains relevant because this conflict still describes much of modern consumer society, where productivity and prestige often pull in opposite directions. Lastly, education, religion, sport, and the extension of leisure class values. Veblen broadens his critique beyond shopping and luxury to examine institutions that appear far removed from markets. He shows how education, religion, and sport can also reflect leisure class values when they reward style, pedigree, ceremony, and symbolic distance from practical work. In education, elite institutions may cultivate refinement and exclusiveness rather than direct usefulness. In religion, inherited ritual and authority can preserve older habits of thought rather than open inquiry. In sport, he sees patterns of rivalry, display, and non-productive expenditure that resemble the honor codes of predatory society. This part of the book is important because it demonstrates that conspicuous waste is not confined to material goods. It can shape standards, tastes, and institutional prestige. Veblen's broader claim is that social systems train people to admire what looks elevated, detached, or expensive, even when those qualities do not improve practical life. By applying the same framework across multiple domains, he turns the book into a general theory of social distinction. That is what gives it lasting analytical force. It explains how status works not only in markets, but across culture itself. In conclusion, the theory of the leisure class is best suited to readers interested in economics, sociology, cultural criticism, and the history of social thought. It is especially valuable for anyone trying to understand consumer culture, class performance, prestige markets, and the way visible spending shapes social behavior. Readers looking for a conventional textbook on economic theory may find it unconventional, but that is precisely what makes it stand out. Veblen is not building a model around efficiency or equilibrium. He is asking why people repeatedly turn wealth into display, why leisure confers honor, and why institutions often preserve status rather than merit. That gives the book a rare combination of sharp satire and structural analysis. Compared with many books on consumption, it is not merely descriptive or moralizing. Compared with many economics texts, it is not narrowly technical. Its lasting value lies in its ability to make everyday habits of spending and prestige look historically and socially organized rather than natural. For readers who want to think more clearly about status competition and the social meaning of wealth, it remains one of the most original books ever written on modern society. If you would like to support Thorstein Veblen, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.